Welcome to the Creative Genius Captivated podcast. My name is Yiqing Zhao, a miserable medical student turned award-winning actor, filmmaker, and creativity coach. While my name literally means artistic youth in Chinese, it took me almost a decade to find my calling and path. I help multi-hyphenates overcome burnout, unleash their creativity, and become unstoppable using mindset and customized strategies. Let's dive in. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Yiqing, and today I have the pleasure to invite Zach Hamilton, a VFX producer. Hi, Zach.
Hello, everybody. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, of course. How are you today?
I'm doing great. You've caught me in the midst of a workday. So I'm literally VFX producing before this call and after this call. So in the midst.
Oh, isn't that great? I am like, you know, I was just thinking about your puppy because I know you recently got a new puppy. Talk about the puppy.
We're getting close. The countdown has begun. We are moving into a new house, so that checklist is fastly getting checked off, thank God, because a lot to do before a new puppy. But we get her on the 26th of June, so we pick her up officially, like she will be home with us on the 26th of June. So yeah, we've been getting photos and visiting, but she's not with us just yet.
Oh, that's so exciting.
The golden retriever.
I saw the photo. Super adorable. It's going to be a new puppy. Is very exciting, but you know, I have one. Mine is turning one in less than 2 weeks.
What kind of puppy? Yeah.
She's a pit bull and lab mix.
Rescue.
Yeah. And everybody knows about my puppy because I'm just always, you know, I'm the mom, she's the baby. And anyway, but
no, I get it.
Have a dog, it's really, yeah. Okay. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself? However you would like to introduce yourself and your credits, your favorite credits, your journey whatsoever.
Yeah. So, again, my name is Zach Hamilton. I'm a film and television producer who specializes in visual effects. I've been doing this now for over 6 years. It's been a real treat. I started off as a visual effects artist, specializing in compositing, and then kind of became enamored with production. And so I went back to school, got my bachelor's degree online, and then got my first gig in themed entertainment and special venue, which is not exactly where I thought I'd land. I definitely was hoping for film and television because that's where I was working as an artist. But you know, life has different plans. But while I was in themed entertainment, I got to work on the Halo Outpost Discovery event that they did across the US that had a bunch of different stops. And we did about 80% of the media installations there, which is really fantastic, including the jewel, if you will, of the experience, which was the Dome Theater show, where you got to basically be in a POV of a drone as it flew across the ring, or a Halo ring. It was really cool and quite the endeavor. So that was a lot of fun. And then I moved on back into film and television, and I worked at Crafty Apes VFX for about 2.5+ years. And there I was a coordinator, worked my way up to associate producer, helped start a new branch in the New Mexico office alongside an amazing individual, Aaron Estrada, who is the head of studio there. Yeah, had a lot of fun there. Pivoted to Pixamundo and out of Los Angeles. And then now I'm currently with Zero VFX freelancing as a producer on a feature film. So yeah, it's been a journey. Been fun though.
Yeah. So what are your favorite credits?
Well, Halo was awesome. I will say, just being a gamer, that was insane to be in a room with 343 Industries, as well as some, you know, people that were legacy from Bungie that worked on like Halo 2, was nuts. And on that show, technically my job at the studio was a coordinator, but on that particular project, I was the casting director as well as the unit production manager for all the live action and voiceover work we were doing. So yeah, I had to like lead meetings with like people that I absolutely adore and love their work. And now I have to try to like keep it together and, you know, be like, and these are the choices and this is why I should choose these people. It was definitely a little wild, but, getting into film and television, there's a lot of really cool ones. I mean, Star Trek has been in my life for over 3 years. I've had the awesome experience of being able to an opportunity to work on Star Trek Picard seasons 1 and 2, as well as Star Trek Strange New Worlds. And then because we worked on Picard, there was some ancillary just kind of liaison work with Discovery, but not actually on the team, just kind of helping out. So I've got to see, you know, a lot of different Star Trek, you know, more modern Star Trek, but it's been a lot of fun. Originally wasn't a big fan of Star Trek. Not that I hate hate Star Trek or anything like that. I was always a Star Wars boy. But when you work on a show like that, you have to do a heavy amount of research. And it really made me come to really love the show and having to watch as much as I did for research and making sure that we're doing everything that was respectful for the fans. And now I really love Star Trek. And it's awesome that I got to work on it.
Yeah,
that's definitely a highlight.
I think it's you know, it's very common for us to take a job that we were not maybe initially a fan of. But then as you ease into it, it's like, oh, I actually love it. And I think it's very important for us to train ourselves in that way so that we kind of get to expand ourselves into actually loving the things that we do.
For sure. Yeah, I'm always open to new challenges. My mother is very similar in this in that every 5 years she gets bored. So she tries to change things up. And I definitely feel like I'm a curse of that, maybe a little bit less than 5 years. But yeah, no, I love being an artist. There are definitely days I miss the creative aspect of being an artist. And there's definitely a difference of going to a movie that you worked on, having actually done the shots that you're seeing on the screen versus like, well, yeah, I was a producer on this. And it's hard for my family to even understand that too, because they're like, so what'd you do in this? I'm like, well, my team did this. And like, well, what did you do? I'm like, well, I didn't do anything because I'm not involved in creative anymore. You know, like I'm a producer, I manage the budget, the schedule, the artist, alongside the VFX supervisor and the department leads. So a little bit different, but I do feel like there is a little bit more ownership in that too, because as a producer, you're involved a lot more, or in a lot more of the process at least, versus an artist. You may come on, especially as a compositor, what I did at the end of a show. As a producer, you know, you could be in it involved literally in the script phase of a pilot, go through the pilot gets greenlit for a season, and now you're working on the first season all the way through wrap, you know, and then into post-production. So you can be really involved. So yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, no, I totally agree. Cause you know, like right now I'm in this phase where I'm in post editing some things, and you know, I'm having a little bit of a struggle with finalizing the edits. It's like I have a picture locked version, but then I'm like, no, it doesn't feel right. I need to change things up. And then my producers have to, you know, really give me the feedback or encouragement saying you cannot be a perfectionist. It's better done than perfect and things like that. I'm like, okay, I actually do appreciate it. Now I'm putting on the hat as an artist, but like we have to, you know, have the support from producers when they actually oversee the whole entire process and really give you a kick in the butt when you need it.
It's not fun, you know. I mean, there's definitely aspects of the job where it's like, I don't want to have to tell you, but I do have to tell you. That's always not ideal either. But I think for the most part, the job is fun. And I do stuff on the side too. You know, I'm starting up a new podcast here soon, as well as I do a lot of screenwriting on the side. And I think that helps at least with me and my creative, you know, outlet.
Yeah, so. I think we all need to, and I think especially post-pandemic, artists have to have that business savviness or acumen or like the system to promote their own work. And then, you know, like you, a producer, I've met other producers, they're like, yeah, we also have something creative going on, because otherwise I'm just gonna feel dead, because you can't always deal with Excel sheets all day.
Yeah, it can't all be spreadsheets, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so you worked on Mulan.
I did. Yeah, that was a really cool experience. That really kind of lent after Mulan. We really, myself and a producer at the studio I was working at, kind of became the Disney team for that studio. So it was a really great experience. They really enjoyed working with us. And so every Disney project that came in, we oftentimes would get pegged as producer coordinator team for those. And that was a lot of fun working on all the Disney projects that I worked on. But Mulan in particular, that was a wild one. I mean, I was a massive fan, as I feel like many people were, of the original animated version. And so to get to work on a live action adaptation was really exciting, especially with Disney. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was crazy. I actually got to go to the premiere. That was ironically my last movie experience pre-pandemic. So, you know, a lot of people, obviously we went on lockdown. So I think it was like March 6th, I went to the premiere at the Disney lot, which was my first time being on the lot, which was very surreal to see a movie. And then to see my name in the credits in the Disney lot theater was just like, wow, mind blown.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was literally my last movie I saw for like over a year. And then I think the next movie I saw in a theater was like Conjuring 3, but my buddy was in it, Ronnie Blevin. So, I got to support him. And I love horror movies.
I'm slowly training myself to love horror movies. I'm still not quite there. It's like it literally put my body in a, you know, like, ooh, this is just like, I have to cover my eyes. But well, I'm glad to know that you had a great experience with Mulan. I did not watch it. Just full disclosure, I did not watch this version. I watched the animation version.
I think you're going to have to watch it now, just because, you know, I feel like you're talking to me, and I mean, like, it's kind of sad. sad that you haven't watched it.
I think the reason, you know, I think the reason why I still haven't watched it is really because, you know, I was born and raised in China. I grew up reciting the whole story of Mulan. Like, that was part of our high school Chinese class. Recited the whole thing in classic Chinese. So I had like very high expectation of the originals, especially it was instilled to me in, you know, like Shakespeare, British actors and shit. It's really that kind of bond or that kind of, you know, connection. So I'm just like, is that going to ruin my connection with Mulan, since I, you know, have a very special connection? So I don't know, and maybe one day I'll find out. But right now,
I'm hesitant about asking you to watch the movie, because now I don't want to like ruin Mulan for you either. I personally think it's a fantastic film, and they definitely tried to cater more towards the actual source material versus the actual animated version. Mm-hmm. So there is definitely that going for it. But I could definitely understand your hesitancy as well, with it being something as close to you as that.
Yeah. Okay. I remember you told me about your cupcake business. And the reason I want you to talk about it is really because I think it will give our audience, especially a bunch of artists, you know, like really get a sense of how doing business or what doing business is like, especially when you were doing the business at a very early age and, you know, supported yourself through college with that. So tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, right out of high school, I went to EMT school and then had a brief stint working for the fire department as EMT and volunteering. And around that same time, my mom was kind of being like, she's always had side hustles. Like, she's one of those ladies that'll do like Santa Claus letters on Groupon, you know, and then send Santa Claus letters to kids. And she was like, let's open up a cupcake shop. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that, because I don't need more reasons to get made fun of at the firehouse. 100% not doing that. And then I was kind of sitting in my office one day and I was kind of thinking about it. I'm like, you know, it'd be kind of cool if we did alcohol infused cupcakes, because they have like rum cakes and stuff, but that's, you know, that's your grandma's recipe. That's a little bit different. I'm talking like, and at the time I was going to Arizona State University. And I was like, you know, it'd be really cool if we had a bar, and then that bar had like frosting instead of like, you know, beer in the draft. You could, you know, frost the cupcakes by pulling the lever, and like it looked like a bar, it didn't look like a cupcake shop. We ended up not doing that because it was so incredibly expensive to get a liquor license and also just to open up a storefront in Tempe, Arizona. But we did start the business, and we ended up doing catering and delivery. And so we did weddings and, you know, special events, and it got wildly out of control. Like, we were in the black within the first year, which is crazy with regards to business. We used Groupon initially. The Groupon agent was like, yeah, you know, we'll set it for 400 cap of a dozen, you know, cupcakes in order, but you won't hit that, so you'll be fine. We hit that. Like, within the 3-day window, we hit 400. And now we're like, suddenly, oh my God, we got to get family involved. We've got to make boxes. We've got to make these cupcakes. But all in all, we had like 16 different flavors. It was crazy. We had like appletini and margarita, and we had an Irish car bomb, and like, we had like all kinds of just different flavors that were all made with the exact same alcohol that was in the drinks, but then made to obviously taste good. But yeah, it was crazy. It was a really successful business. We left on top. Like, we didn't need to close it down. My mom got a job as a hospital director, and I decided that I didn't want to do cupcakes for the rest of my life. But in doing that, we generated a lot of income for sure, and it definitely helped finance my college considerably in doing that business. So and I learned a lot, and I wasn't the baker, I was the marketer, you know, and I tried to market us, get us on news stations, do partnerships with other companies that did, like, we had a partnership with a company that did adult milk, so they would do like adult chocolate milk and adult strawberry milk, so it would be like, you know, spiked chocolate milk that you could put like over ice cream or whatever. So we made cupcakes with them. It was a lot of fun. Definitely
so
different.
You were a marketer. So would you say that you had your first, you know, business experience or like marketing experience from that hustle?
I would say, yeah, that definitely from a professional standpoint. Yeah. I mean, I did YouTube, which I don't like to admit, but I mean, I love it. Don't get me wrong. And I do miss it. I did YouTube at a young age, and I learned how to really brand myself, I think, very extensively in doing that. And I definitely took a lot of what I learned there and applied that to the business. But yeah, 100%. I mean, we had business cards made. We had t-shirts. We were constantly running competitions on our Facebook to generate likes on Facebook and to get a community going, you know, so it was a lot. Yeah, we definitely, it was a lot to take under, especially at a young age. I think at the time we started, I might've been like 21, 22. And then we ended it when I was about 23, 24, and I went to a different college for visual effects. But yeah, but it was a very wild 2+ years.
And, you know, I always like to say how you do one thing is how you do everything. So it's like how you did that business, you can just transfer the same experience and lessons to your VFX, you know, producing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like, I have a lot of artists on my team that are young. You know, some of them are in their early 20s. And I think to myself, I'm like, man, you know, had I gotten in this business then, like, where would I be now? You know, I'm 30 years old now. I've been doing this for over 6 years. And I'm, you know, and I like to, you know, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but I worked really hard. And I've definitely gotten to a great place where I'm at now. And I do often sometimes wonder, I'm like, well, what if I started when I was 20? You know, like, where would I be now? But ultimately, I think to that point, you know, all those experiences, all the businesses that I did, as well as just that just general growing and maturing that I've had since, I feel like really helped me get to where I'm at now. And I don't necessarily think that I would have had that much of a trajectory or speed and acceleration in my career if I had started younger. So I think everything within good reason.
That's a great point. And the reason I say that is because I've caught myself having this thought multiple times, because, you know, I was a medical student in China, and then I came here in 2014 for grad school. And my grad school, my master's degree is in public health. So I graduated from grad school in 2016 with a master's in public health. And I'm like, but I wanted to be an actor. So, you know, and I was what? I was like 24 at that time. So considering my international background and whatever, I'm like, I have zero connections. I had zero connections in New York. But then I was thinking, what if I started when I was younger? What if I immigrated to the US when I was younger? What if my parents immigrated here and brought me here? Like, we have all these what ifs, but like your trajectory, your path makes you who you are. Like, those what ifs are just wishful thinking.
For sure. Yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned that. A good buddy of mine, Lee Shorten, he's an actor as well. He was on Man in the High Castle, but like he had a similar thing. Like, he was in Australia, went to law school, was like a lawyer, and then decided, hey, I'm going to go to Vancouver on a, I don't remember what he said. I think he made it like so his family didn't question it, like a business trip or something. But really, it was like his, like, I'm going to try to be an actor moment. And then it worked out for him. But it was just really funny because it's like, again, you know, like doctor, lawyer, it's like this vastly different career. And then it ended up working out. But, you know, he had nothing, you know, in Vancouver either. He just tried to. So it's always really fascinating to hear stuff like that, for sure.
And I think, you know, till today, till now, I look back at that experience with fondness, because, you know, I like that was the experience where I really learned and made myself stronger. Like, I feel like whatever you've been through made you stronger. And that it's like a part of who you are. And even if it's not directly related with what you're doing right now.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. Definitely.
So when I think about VFX, the first thought that came to my mind is it's super expensive. Like, it burns dollars. What's your take on that? And what's your tips in terms of like budgeting and VFX?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, it varies. It really does. Cause I've had the luxury of working on film and television. And then in the film sect, you know, I've worked on like very high budget films. And then I've also worked on some independents as well. And so every budget varies 100%. And so as a producer, you have to be mindful of that for sure when you're bidding out work. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, it's not just like suddenly the work becomes cheaper. Like, the work is still the work and it's still going to cost a certain amount, but there are ways of kind of getting around it. You know, there are aspects to the job where we can outsource to other vendors that might be cheaper than our artists, and then take on the more, you know, heavy work that's going to be a little bit more artistically involved and that you really want to manage. We can do that in-house, and that kind of lowers budgets too. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely, on some shows, I've seen budgets as high as like, I don't know, like $300,000 to $400,000 an episode. It can get that high. I mean, in some HBO shows, not that I've worked on in particular, but I've heard that some of those episodes can get upwards to $1 million. I mean, for the show overall, for the episode, you know, that's everyone's budget, but VFX can get very costly. I mean, I've definitely seen shots get as expensive as $90,000 for just one shot. And to really explain a shot to the audience, because I find a lot of times when I do public speaking engagements or podcasts, there is a little bit of a disconnect. So a shot is essentially, if you look at like a dialogue scene and we're talking and the camera's looking at one actor, and then it cuts and it looks at the actor talking, and then it cuts again and looks at the other actor. Every time that camera's cutting, it's cutting to a different shot. And so shows can get massive. I mean, Picard alone, or season one of Star Trek Picard, I think for our specific studio, and there were multiple studios working on it, but we were the primary, it was like over, I think 1,100, almost 1,200 shots. So that each one of those those shots has a team of artists that are working on, you know, whatever needs to go into that particular shot. And there's 1,200 of them, and they all have to be done on a very tight schedule because it's television. Yeah, it can get really pricey for sure.
So do you have any tips, suggestions for independent filmmakers who don't really have the budget, but they still want to achieve the same effects, or, you know, if they can bypass it?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said about practical, right? Like, I always enjoy watching older films, especially films that are in the 80s, you know, that really kind of predate the glory days of visual effects, like when we really started getting the ball rolling, and then seeing like how some of those films age really well. Like, I recently just watched Top Gun, the original, in preparation of seeing Top Gun Maverick, and it's shocking how well that panned out. But, you know, there were some of it was just miniatures, but they shot really well and it looked really great. And that's something that nowadays, you know, is something that might be considerably cheaper than doing visual effects. But there's also really great tools out there. Adobe has definitely cornered the market a lot in indie films, because you can get the Adobe Creative Suite, and now that gives you access to an editing suite. It gives you access to even compositing through After Effects. It gives you a huge library of things to work with at a fraction of the cost, because obviously software is very expensive. So that's great if you want to do it yourself. However, the other option too is, you know, looking at the schools are not like they were 10 years ago. I literally was just having a conversation with some of my colleagues about this the other day and recruiting people. And it's like 10 years ago, the schools were not necessarily a joke, but they weren't like producing amazing talent. Like, you were getting some insight, but it wasn't like, and now some of these students that are coming out of these schools, I mean, they could easily be doing senior level work right out of college. I mean, the amount of education and knowledge that they're getting at these private schools, as well as even some state schools, like BYU has a really good program. There's a lot of visual effects and animation or animators that come out of there. Yeah, but then now you've got like all these trade schools like Noman, Dave School, SCAD, Ringling, that just produce volumes of talent. So that's always an option too, because you can get junior talent that can potentially take on bigger work. They're going to be more hungry, and they might be more affordable than trying to find, you know, even just one senior artist to do all your work for you. So there's definitely avenues. And then there's just a lot of online education if it's something that maybe you want to take on yourself. I mean, again, there's FX PhD is a really great resource. Even LinkedIn Learning has some, because they just recently, well, not recently, but they merged with, I always forget the name of the company that started with an L. But yeah, they have a lot of great tutorials, and a lot of that stuff is stuff that I learned on the job. And now you can learn it for a fraction of the cost and not even have to have experience. So yeah, there's definitely ways of doing visual effects in your film, either yourself or hiring, you know, junior talent out of colleges, or even when they're in colleges, they're trying to beef up their reel. So if you give them an opportunity to put something on their demo reel that's going to get them a good paying job or a job at a studio, they're going to do it. So
that's exactly what I did for my last short. I hired my colorist and my sound post sound. They both have experience, but they are both young and they're trying about their career. And I checked out their work, and I'm like, you work on a budget, and this is my budget, and you're happy about it. And, you know, so I really think that's a great tip. And even if you do have a budget, like, I think when I move on to bigger budget work, I still want to give young people a chance, because I've been there and I was given those opportunities too.
Oh yeah. I mean, I have constantly, my LinkedIn's always filled up, or even my general inbox, to have a way that people can contact me on my website of people that are just like looking for general advice. And I always try to take that on, no charge. Like, I am very much in the vein. I think back in the day, prior to me getting in the industry, it was a very egocentric business to a degree, where there's a lot of people like looking out for themselves, and like, I've got to make sure I'm, you know, fed. And I think now with the next generation of visual effects artists, is a lot more of that team, you know, camaraderie that's happening. And I've always tried to instill that myself. And so if I can rise people up with me, that's always better, because it's more people that I know. And if I feel like they have success, or that they're going to be successful, they've got that talent or that drive, like, I want to help them, both from just like, I love helping people, but also like, it's getting more talented people in the industry that I may end up being able to call upon. If I need a staff for a position, there's one more person, you know? So it's really a win-win, but ultimately it's really just, I would have loved to have help. I definitely had help along the way, but there's a lot more that I did on my own coming up. But I don't look at that as like a, well, I did it this way, so everyone else has to have it hard. Like, I would rather have had help. So if I can be that help, sure, let's do it, you know?
Exactly. And I think everybody needs to listen to this, because I've seen so many people with the scarcity mindset, like the becoming overly competitive. And that's just not helpful to anyone. And
really,
I mean,
it really is not.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like when I got my first job, like professionally, because I'd been freelancing, I got my first job at MPC Vancouver. I got it like 2 months before I graduated. And I will guarantee you that 3 months before I graduated, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to get a job. Like I was definitely stressing. And I applied early with what I had from like my block three compositing class. I didn't even have anything for my capstone project in my demo reel. But I'm like, look, I'm going to try to get ahead of this. And I feel like I've got some personal projects in here that are enough. It was like a 40-second reel. It was nothing special, but it was enough to demonstrate, hey, I can do the job. And so I submitted it and I got a job. And there was definitely that initial like, dude, what the heck, man? Like, how come he got a job? And how come this? And like, well, dude, because I applied, number one. And I think part of it too is people get in their own way, especially when they're young or they're in school and they're like, I got to get this in there and I got to get this just right. You'd be surprised at what you don't have to get right. You know, like obviously you need to focus on your demo reel. You need to, but you don't need to put everything under the sun into your demo reel. Like this is a huge thing for artists, especially. That's a good tip. But like I had a 40-second demo reel and I definitely had probably 4 minutes worth of work I could have crammed in there, but that would have been potentially 3 minutes and, you know, 20 seconds of work that wouldn't have been good. That they would have looked at that and been like, I don't know if I like this guy, but they saw only my good work and that was enough. And so even when I got that and I was facing that kind of somewhat animosity with some people, and most people were very supportive, of course, but there were definitely some people that were like, you know, like, wow, how come he got it, not me? And even to those people, I'm like, just apply. And they're like, well, I want to get this one shot from this. I'm like, dude, I had nothing from this project in there and I got the job. Like, just do it. Like, just apply.
Exactly. It's amazing how our brains like to trick us. Oh, you need to, in order to get to B, you need to do A first. And you know, it's just like we like to overcomplicate things when the real thing is just put in the work and efforts and make it consistent and boom, it'll show up. It might not show up at exactly the time that you want, or it might not be exactly that opportunity that you are aiming for, but eventually that's how you get results, is that you put in the
efforts. I wanted to be an animator. Let's be real. I wanted to be an animator. I went to school to be an animator. And very quickly realized that as much as I loved animation, there was a lot more jobs as a compositor and I still enjoyed compositing. So I'm like, you know what? Pivot. And I went into compositing and I got a job, you know, and I had friends that really struggled to get jobs as an animator. And I'm not saying don't go for it. If you want to be an animator, go for it. But, you know, because I pivoted, I got a job very quickly. Some of my friends, it took them, you know, 3 or 6 months after graduation to land their first animation gig, but they got it. You know, you got to stick with it. You can't just, it's tough to say that because everyone's got to pay the bills. But I mean, I've been there. I mean, I was a hospital security guard at some point in the last 6 years because I was in between jobs. I needed to pay the bills. You know, it was right as I was trying to transition into production. Not a glamorous job. I literally had a lady throw poop at me.
Oh, no.
So yeah, that happened.
Stories. I think that will really give you something to write about. Like that's, I'm seeing a movie right there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
About that lady, clearly, because she's got stuff going on in her life. No. But yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of ups and downs, and I feel like that's probably why VFX artists relate so well with actors, especially because like actors, we have to go on a lot of auditions. We apply to like hundreds of places and you might only land 5 interviews or auditions if you look at it that way. And then you may only get a callback for a second interview out of 2. And then you may still not even get the job, or you get the job out of hundreds. And so there's that constant, like, am I good enough? Why are all these people passing on me? But ultimately it's just like, it's a very flooded market, but there is a job for you out there. There's a lot of opportunities. You just got to keep with it, you know, and then just continue to network with people, get advice from people. I am not the only person that is willing to give advice to someone who hits me up on LinkedIn or on my website. There are a lot of people like me that are willing to do that. You just got to ask.
Exactly. You just got to ask. You just got to send that email. You just got to, you know, do the post. You just got to, and you can't imagine how many people stop at that step. It's about that taking action step, push the send button or post button or whatever, or just show up. Really like 95% of the success is about showing up.
Yeah, you get in your head. You're just like, what is this person going to think? Like, they're either going to not respond to you or they're going to respond to you. But either way, something's going to happen.
Exactly.
It's not like the world's going to end if they don't.
No.
I mean, I can't tell you how many people, because when I did do public speaking, I always was very much about like LinkedIn this. And this is fantastic advice for anyone, crew as well, you know, cast and crew, or people that are trying to expand their network in the film industry, no matter what your role is. But, you know, I have like 100 connections. I have 500 connections. I have 1,000 connections. I'm like, cool. Like, how many of those connections do you talk to? Like, what? Like, yeah, do you talk to anyone? I'm like, well, no, but I have this many connections. I'm like, well, that means absolutely nothing. Because if you don't actually talk with your connections, then how are you going to build relationships? How are you going to learn from them? How are they going to learn from you? How are are you going to have that reciprocal relationship? And then ultimately, you know, how are you going to build a foundation where you get jobs sent to you? I mean, that's happened to me so many times now where, I mean, even the job that I have right now, I'm a producer on a feature film. I didn't ask for this job. I didn't apply for this job. I was working at Pixelmundo, you know, and then I had some stuff come up with my family. I had a brief moment where I had a lull and they came to me. I didn't even apply. I wasn't even looking for work. And they're like, hey, how do you feel about being a VFX producer on this film? I'm like, let's have a conversation. So, and that's because I knew people there and they knew my talents. They're like, hey, this guy might be a good fit. Boom. You know, so there's a lot to be said about that too.
Exactly. Well, we can have a whole nother session about networking.
Oh,
100%. That networking is an art in itself. I know. And, you know, I've learned it the hard way. I just remember right before the pandemic, I was such a isolated person. And then it's really during the pandemic that I opened myself up and, you know, started making connections. And I think at first, a lot of people say, oh, I hate those, you know, fake businessy connections. But I'm like, well, what makes you think that way? Why can't you just make friends in the first place and see if anything comes out of the friendship? Like,
yeah,
be a genuine, first, exactly. You know, just
be interested in that person. Be, and then
exactly.
Something comes up,
great. Exactly. And I think when you have that mindset, your life is just going to be so much easier when you don't have that attachment to making certain things come out of this relationship, that, you know, everybody's life is going to be much easier and happier and miracles will come along the way. And, you know, I really think that's the way to build a lifelong career in the arts. When you build relationships, is about thinking about building this relationship in a genuine, authentic way and always think about adding value to other people's lives first.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Great. So what is your parting thought or quote to our audience?
Well, I mean, keeping in the vein of what we're talking about now, I mean, to quote the great one, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. I mean, that is such valuable advice in general in anything that you do. But, you know, like we've said very much on the back half of this episode, you know, your mind can play a lot of games on you and it can definitely make you feel like maybe you're less than. But, you know, ultimately you get to decide that, you know, and there's a lot of people that may not even be thinking what you're thinking. So just do what you got to do. Don't be afraid to take some risks. You know, obviously calculated risks is, as I'm older now, I'm not as flexible geographically as I might have been in moving on a dime to take a job as I now have a family. But, you know, if you're young and you have options, like, you know, take the
explore.
Job in Vancouver. And sometimes, yeah. You know, take a job in Vancouver. My first job was in Vancouver. I was living in Florida. They paid for all my moving. They helped me with all of my visas. Like, and I think a lot of people would have been like, well, how am I going to get to Vancouver? And how am I going to do this? And how am I going to afford this? Like, I didn't have to do anything. They paid for all of it. They helped me entirely along the way. And I had a great opportunity because of it. But if you had gotten in your way about thinking of something like that, you may not even have that option.
Exactly.
So take the shots.
Yeah, take the shots. That's a great quote to wrap our session. Thank you so much, Zach.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure.
Hey, thanks for hanging out with me. You're now one step closer to having the creative life and career you want. If you would like to deepen the work, go visit coaching.yikingzhao.com to find out how to work with me. Or you can hang out with me on Instagram at yikingzhao1222. If you would like to receive a freebie, 7 questions to get you unstuck, please subscribe to my newsletter. You will love it. All right, I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care, happy creating, bye.